This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, man.
Welcome back to Wrestling with Optimism, Season 2 is what we're going to call this little endeavor. Brad Stutz joined by Graham Coffin, the proprietor of the history of WWE.com and author of several published notable books that we'll be talking a lot about, and also a new addition to our team. Welcome Dan from the Place to Be Nation, this new incarnation of Wrestling with Optimism being brought to us by the guys at Place to Be Nation. We are really excited for this budding new partnership, and it's nice to be talking to everybody. Graham, Dan, say hello to the folks listening out there.
Hello, folks.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going very well. I'm excited to be doing this again. For anyone that may not have heard us before, or anyone that is hearing us for the first time, you know, we did this little show over on the history of WWE.com for about a year and a half or so, and just kind of life got in the way, and things came up, and kind of fell off out of the rhythm of doing it, and we had our reasons for that, and we're going to get into that here in a little bit. But Graham, with your encouragement, we're back at it again, and I don't know, do you think there's a place for much optimism in 2015 in professional wrestling? I think that's something that we struggled with a lot in 2014 and may continue to struggle with right now. Do you think the landscape is right for us to try to bring a little bit more positive energy to things nowadays?
Well, it wasn't too long ago that I was watching the Wrestle Kingdom 9 live pay-per-view at 2 in the morning until 6 in the morning. And at one point during that, Matt Stryker says, "It's a great time to be a pro wrestling fan." And it's very easy. Like, we are so knee-deep in this industry. It is so easy to harp on the stuff we disagree with, the stuff that drives us crazy. But you know what? When we do that, we just kind of make it harder to be a fan. And I think what this podcast, why I really enjoyed this podcast and why I wanted to bring this podcast back, is it really helps remind us when we listen to it why we are fans, why we like this stuff, and what about the stuff that we like. We are all passionate, and that doesn't mean we have to be super critical of everything. Why can't we just like it? Why can't we just like something for what it is? And I think that's missing in pro wrestling.
Well, hopefully that's a niche that we can fill and a hole that we can fill. Speaking of a hole, we should address that there is a gaping hole in our usual broadcast team here. Grant Sawyer is going to be back with us on occasion, joining our little panel here. Life, once again, he's a busy dude. He's got a great wife and a great kid and a pug, and he's got a lot of responsibilities as an owner of the Green Bay Packers that really keeps him busy a lot. So he's going to be back with us down the road, joining the panel. But obviously, you know, this is my and his vision, along with yours, Graham, and he's welcome back anytime. But kind of in his absence, somewhat, we're welcoming Dan from the Place to Be Nation, and let's get to know him a little bit. Dan, what makes you happy as a wrestling fan?
I mean, it's basically one of my earliest memories growing up was, you know, flipping TV, and when I wasn't quite at the point where the Saturday morning cartoons were keeping my attention span, every now and again I would find myself a little bit looking at other things. And back then, back in the late 80s, it was It was wrestling. It was wrestling, and of course, to a lesser extent, monster trucks. But I kept with the wrestling a little bit longer. And I was always about like the big over the top characters. I was a huge mark for the Hogans and the Savages of the world. And after going away from it for a long, long time, an opportunity with meeting up with some guys from Place to Be Nation kind of got me back into it. So it's been quite a journey.
Yeah, I think a lot of people. I think a lot of people kind of have that, where it never personally happened to me, but I've always been, as Graham said, knee deep in this. But I hear a lot of stories about how we got away from wrestling for a while, or oh, I don't watch it anymore, or what have you. And it kind of feels like a lot of people are in that mindset right now of where they used to watch it, or they. They enjoyed it back in the day when Rock and Austin or whoever, you know, I'm born and raised in the Carolinas, so I hear a lot of times from people that skew even older than that, people that say, oh, I watched, you know, Steamboat and Youngblood, the Rock and Roll Express, but I don't watch it anymore. And I don't know, maybe that's something, that's an idea that we need to devote some time to here in this first venture into season two here is where did the optimism go? Because I know that, to be frank, that was one of the reasons why we have not produced a show since WrestleMania weekend. We all left New Orleans with this great feeling that great things were to come and that this was going to be a great year, and a lot of that stuff never materialized. You know, our guy got hurt, and then the guy that would have replaced him got hurt, and then, you know, we lost the Shield. We lost, I don't know, it feels like the end or so of 2013, in 2014, there were just these phenomenal matches on free TV every week with Bryan and Rollins and Ambrose and Punk and the Wyatts and all these guys, and it seems like it really was a lot more fun to watch then, and pretty much not long after Mania, it really seemed 2014, and if that is an accurate representation, that the optimism waned in a lot of us last year.
I would agree with that. I think going back to WrestleMania last year, we actually did two shows, or actually three shows. We did one sitting outside the Superdome before it started. We did one back at the hotel where we had Steve Corino on as a guest, oddly enough. And then we did one, I believe it was the next day, because you were already back in North Carolina, and I was, I think, somewhere at a hotel in Alabama, somewhere about halfway. And and it was right after, I think, right before, right after Raw. And it was kind of funny, because if you go back and listen to that show, you can tell how both tired we are. Because we're having a conversation, but it's almost like we want to go to bed. That last show, and you're right. There's so much that's changed over the past year, or 10 months or so, and I think we need more optimism. I think we need more. We can't really control the booking of Raw or SmackDown or any of that, but we can. Choose how we think about it, or we can choose how we look at other wrestling out there. And other wrestling out there can be indies, such as the CWF, like you help run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, one thing that you brought up a few weeks ago, most folks aren't privy to this, is you had some kind of, without being critical, because it's always easy to sit back and Monday morning quarterback this kind of stuff, without being critical, having an idea as to how to do 2014 better than what we saw.
Well, it just seemed to me like, you know, and we would get some great people talking to us on Twitter. It's like, hey, you know, I missed the show, or, you know, hey, what happened to the show? Are you guys going to start up again or whatever? And honestly, there just wasn't a lot of optimism in the air with me and Grant. I still watch. I honestly don't think he does, at least not with the same ferventness and regularity that he always did. And it just seemed like I said, a lot of things that were, it seemed like 2013, we were on the cusp of something in I'll say the industry, but the industry is led by WWE. If you think otherwise, you're stupid. I'm sorry, but there's no, the WWE leads the industry for the time being. And it seemed like they were doing a lot of things right. You know, you had guys like, Fandango and Big E Langston that were on TV for a few months, and they kind of built up to their debuts and having their first match at WrestleMania. And, you know, it seemed like they were trying, you know, something with Curtis Axel, and it seemed like they were trying something with the Wyatts and trying something with the Shield, and all these great, you know, matches on TV every week where Bryan would wrestle somebody from the Shield, or they would have a great six-man against somebody. And it just seemed like in one foul swoop, all that was gone. And in my opinion, the product has really, really suffered from it. Not that there weren't some highlights in 2014, but I think if you look at the week-to-week television, I mean, the year before just blows it out of the freaking water, especially that second half of the year where it seemed like a lot of guys had really hit their stride. And you know, I think back to like the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view and the Shield against the Wyatts, and just the aura that had about it, and the feel that had about it, and how excited the people in that building were. And there hasn't been anything that's felt like that, you know, since I would say right around the end of WrestleMania weekend, where it seemed like, you know, and I don't know, anyone can jump in and say that maybe I'm wrong here, but it seemed to me, and I know we talked about it, Graham, it seemed to me like leaving the stadium in New Orleans, the rest of the year booked itself.
To some degree. I mean, I remember us walking out among a group of 10 or 15, wherever the CWF crew was, and we were already going, well, it's going to be Bryan and Brock at SummerSlam. We already know that.
Right.
And then it's going to be Roman and Brock at WrestleMania next year. We were talking about that at the hotel right after the show.
Right. And, you know, I was really excited about Lesnar being the champion from SummerSlam on. And I thought there was a lot of cool stuff you could do with it. And I thought, surely, when they put Cesaro with Heyman the night after Mania, I said, okay, this is going to be great. I said, Cesaro is going to be with Heyman once Brock gets the belt at SummerSlam, which was a foregone conclusion. They'll split them up somehow. We'll get a great Cesaro versus Brock thing, maybe at Survivor Series or whatever. And all the while, they'll just be kind of, you know, stringing Roman along. And when the time's right, they'll probably split the Shield. But, you know, they had set the Shield up, in my opinion, for this great babyface run. And, you know, it just seemed like by June, everything was turned upside down, with Bryan being hurt, the Shield splitting up. The Wyatts, and Bray in particular, was so hot heading into Mania, and then working with Cena is never a bad thing. He's the top guy, but working with Cena in a way that the everything was structured that made him feel like just another guy, when he was one of the only guys that really had an aura and a presence about him. Dan, chime in here. What were your thoughts, maybe towards the springtime of last year? What were you expecting out of the product compared to what we got? Are we off base here, or was that a consensus opinion that you seem to feel as well?
No, actually, I tend to sway a little bit towards giving the benefit of the doubt and trying to stay upbeat about things and not necessarily jump to conclusions like some. Some people watch a show and immediately pan it and then not think of what's down the road. When I was thinking back to the spring, and I remember watching the WrestleMania with all the guys, and we were at the famous Boneheads Wing Bar, and we were all having a great time, and we all left, and we were feeling all happy and wonderful, because we looked at the landscape, and we saw, okay, Bryan's now on top. You saw a guy like Cesaro really make a big impact. You know, you kind of at the time, you thought, wow, that him picking up the Big Show is going to be one of those highlights you see over and over again, you know, and you saw the Shield was dominant, and you're like, wow, the future looks great. Like, what they have gold, they have basically a license to print money with some of these guys. But then as you saw, as we, of course, everybody has talked about before, things changed, and a lot of the plans changed. Guys' pushes got, you know, derailed, other guys got lifted. I notice that, yeah, what did, in the long run, what did Bray Wyatt get out of that feud with John Cena? Not a whole lot, you know, even though he was in a big spot. Where did he go from it? I remember going to the Boston pay-per-view at Money in the Bank, and Bray was, even though Bray really didn't have much of a chance as far as the conventional wisdom goes of winning that event, anytime he kind of made a move towards the ladder, he was still getting electric reactions from the crowd, but it was all for naught. You know, other guys have kind of done, you know, overtaken his position. So it's really looking back at it now, and we're less than a year from that time period of that really intense optimism after WrestleMania, you start to see where some of the wheels started to come off the wagon a bit when guys went down with injury, guys maybe you thought were going to be in bigger spots kind of faded away into the background a little bit, and that's what we end up with entering the new year of 2015.
Yeah, I think you're dead on, and I think it's an interesting perspective. You know, we weren't able to make it to another pay-per-view after Mania. It's an interesting perspective that you were there a little bit later in the summer to see, like, the New Orleans were electric, and it just tempered off from there. So it's going to be kind of what we talk about here is where did the optimism go, and is there just cause for us to be optimistic right now? I'm going to pose some questions going all the way back to a year ago, and you know, where things ended up in 2014 and where we can think about them heading in 2015. 2014, you know, I think the year started off, I think that's always going to be a Royal Rumble that we talk about a lot. The whole Batista experiment. And I'll pose this as the first question to you both. Would Batista have gotten over to the degree that they were wanting to position him as? Would Batista have been better as a surprise showing up unannounced and winning it rather than weeks of vignettes and little promos that gave people time to kind of be like, I don't really want Batista. I want this other guy instead.
Maybe, but they always wanted the other guy. So if the backlash would not have been that night, it would have been the next night, it would have been the night thereafter. At some point, I think they're still faced with that same decision that they had to make, which is put Brian in the match.
Yeah, I think so too. What about you, Dan?
I mean, half the fun of the Royal Rumble is getting those surprises. And I think Batista had been gone long enough that if he did show up, it would have been like, oh my gosh. I don't know if he's as popular as, say, somebody like if for whatever reason, if like Edge came back or something, you know, he was a medical miracle and actually came back, and maybe that would have made people forget, okay, we could deal with Daniel Bryan not being here. Look, it's Edge. But Batista might not have been that type of personality, but I think it might have been worth checking out, you know, because again, everybody was so angry about the whole Bryan thing, and but if Batista comes out unannounced, I think he might have gotten a little bit of a different reaction. I'm not sure it would be complete booing necessarily.
It probably would have been kind of like Cena at MSG at that Rumble, where they go, holy crap, he's not supposed to be here, and then he wins, and then they boo him.
Oh, that's possible,
that's
too.
That's a great moment with Cena, though. Like, that comeback,
and then
is
they boo
a moment
him.
That deserves to be replayed over and over again.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's an interesting theory for sure. But then again, Roman Reigns had an excellent Royal Rumble too, and I think people were kind of like, well, he's part B. He's secondary if Bryan doesn't come out here. And once he didn't win, it was just all over from there.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And obviously, pretty much immediately after the Royal Rumble, we have what in a lot of ways may have ended up being the story of the year. CM Punk walks out of Monday Night Raw, walks out of the company, and that sets into motion a lot of things that drastically changes a lot. Do you guys think Brian would have gotten the spot regardless had Punk not walked out of the company?
Probably not. And I say that, it had been told through some of the more reliable wrestling news websites what the plans were. Those were the plans, and that would not have changed unless Punk did what he did.
Yeah, and for the uninitiated, and Punk has talked about this on the record, it was to be Orton with Batista, Cena with Wyatt, Punk with Triple H, and Brian with Sheamus, presumably, maybe a grudge match, maybe for like the U.S. title or something. We'll never know that one. And Punk, you know, later on when he finally broke his silence back in November, you know, he talked about that. He knew that it, you know, he confirmed that, knowing that, you know, he was supposed to wrestle Triple H. So, you know, we have this very unique time in the business wherein the big company, who's known for kind of telling the audience what they want and telling the audience what they should want, is, you know, kind of being forced to kind of bend to their will, because they just, this Brian thing just would not be denied. Dan, what do you think? What caused that moment at WrestleMania to be reshuffled more? Was it Punk walking out? Was it Batista flopping? Can you blame, you know, both evenly? What's your take?
I think Batista flopping really caught them seriously off guard. I think a lot of them thought the way I was thinking about in my previous statement, that, you know, we bring back Batista and people are going to love Batista again. And I don't think that obviously was the first, that really showed how tone deaf they were in the situation, because he came back, obviously people were still upset about Brian. He comes back and they try to make him into a face, and people were so sick of Randy Orton. They didn't want to see Orton versus Batista. They could see on paper that we were seeing all these, you know, kick-ass matches with Brian versus The Shield and Punk versus Wyatt and all kinds of different great matchups in ring, and then you're going to put these two slots out there to be the headliner at WrestleMania. I think the Batista flop is just as much to blame as anything else. I mean, but at that point, I mean, starting from SummerSlam of 13 with the whole beginning of the Authority, they wanted to see Daniel Bryan get that happy ending, and anything short of that would have been completely crapped on by all the fans, really.
And Dan, not to cut you off, but in all those pay-per-views that came right after where Bryan was denied the title, I was never upset, because I'm sitting there going, well, the payoff's at Mania. The payoff's at Mania. He's going to win the Rumble. And then, you know, they just keep it going. They just kind of, they're kind of oblivious to that golden moment that they have sitting there by booking Orton and Batista instead.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Graham, and I'm glad you brought it up. I think the fan that has maybe a little bit more of a mature taste, the fan that has been watching for years and years, that is so, you know, sticking to it, I think has that opinion a lot of times. They see where it's going. They know traditionally what is to be expected, and they kind of say that exact thing to themselves, that, okay, well, it's going to be Brian's WrestleMania, and that's why they're doing this. And I think that's one of the ways that they kind of booked themselves into a corner, because that's not necessarily how they are thinking. You know, in their mind, this whole Brian thing might just be, you know, to get us to the next thing, whether it's Batista or whatever. But I think they don't give the audience enough credit, in the sense that guys that have been watching for years, and, you know, we saw, you know, Lex Luger body slam Yokozuna, and we've seen all these moments that were designed to make a top babyface. We get to that destination a lot of times, even if it wasn't necessarily something that they were intending to do. If they were just going to say, okay, Brian's hot right now, we're going to use him in this, this, and this, in the meantime, while we've got this other thing on the back burner, I don't think they give enough credit to the fan that has watched over the years that says exactly what you say, that, you know, that this is a moment that compares to, you know, when you knew Shawn was going to win the belt at 12 or when you knew Austin was going to win the belt at 14. We want those moments, and I think they got to be careful because it can get very tricky because, you know, the moments that are happening right now with Dolph Ziggler can become that.
Oh,
and then
yes.
They're going to have another uprising on their hands that they may not be able to control.
I really think with Survivor Series, it doesn't matter what they do with him. You know, with this firing, it kind of opens the door to do something else, but and it kind of keeps him at that elevated level too. But with Survivor Series, there were several people after that going, that's the new Brian. If Brian doesn't come back, that's the new baby face, young up-and-coming baby face is going to go after the belt.
Yeah, I think so too. And so the beginning of the year has a lot of kind of turmoil, and of course the WWE Network launches at the beginning of the year, and we were all excited about it, and I went on record on this show saying I don't understand why there's anybody that loves wrestling that doesn't subscribe to this network. And, you know, they're talking about estimations of a million subscribers and this and that. Dan, was a million subscribers, was that estimation unrealistic? Will they hit it eventually? And long term, is this thing going to be a success or a failure?
I think it really depends on the current state of the product. I have a guy who is a friend of mine who got it the same day as I did, and we were all excited about it and giddy, and oh my gosh, we're going to watch all this stuff, and I'm never going to leave my house, and this, that, and the other. But we had a nice conversation over the New Year's, and he was like, I might just drop it. And I go, why? Because I'm sitting here, you know, doing projects for Place to Be Nation. I'm going to be writing columns, and I'm going to be doing this, that, and the other, and I want to catch up on the vintage vaults and all kinds of things. And I'm like, you know, oh, maybe I want to fill in some gaps of things that I might have missed along the way and maybe other promotions. And he's just like, I'm just really bummed out by how things are going right now. And I go, well, I mean, geez, don't take it out on the network. But anyway, I think a lot of people kind of are souring on it. It's like they don't want to put their names on something that says WWE right now because it's not a product that they're proud of. But I was just like everybody else, and still to this day, you know, I don't know if I watch it necessarily every day like I had originally predicted, but there's still bits of stuff that I do want to watch. There's things I want to catch up on. Certainly NXT, I think by itself is worth, you know, the price of your subscription anyway. That's some very good programming, and hungry people, you're watching, you know, the stars of tomorrow, hopefully. But I don't know about, I mean, sure, maybe if you incorporate the other countries that are now going to start to get it too, maybe they'll reach some of those numbers. But I really think that they've got to do a better job of selling the product a little bit better. I mean, aside from WWE programming, where do you see anything for advertising this network to people that maybe aren't diehard wrestling fans like all of us?
Yeah, I think that's dead on. I think the state of the product currently dictates people's interest in everything that's under that umbrella. What do you think, Graham Cawthon?
I think that is a factor. I also think it's kind of interesting if you ever go on the network and look at the streaming schedule as to what's going on throughout the day. There are so many days that I get on there, and you think about the vast libraries that they have to work with. There's so many days that I get on there, and I turn on, I look to see what's airing later that day, and it's a Total Divas marathon. And good for Total Divas. I know it's making them a lot of money. It's giving the Divas a lot of exposure. And I don't hate the show. I think the show helps give these girls a lot more personality than what they get on the weekly television. But when you look at the network and look to see how much spotlight is given to the current product versus the 40 or 30-something years of video footage that they have, I think that's also a factor. They put so much emphasis on their current stuff on the network as opposed to World Class or Primetime or TNT, all that other stuff, that I do see that as maybe being off-putting. If I don't like the current product, why am I going to invest so much time in that?
Yeah, I agree 100%. So, you know, the network, I don't know much about, you know, the business end of things. I don't profess to know any more than anybody else. But the network projections that came out in you know, February were not in line with what they were hoping for. I think that's something that we can all agree on. And then we have WrestleMania, and it's wonderful. In my opinion, it was one of the best shows in company history. And a lot of things seem to have been done right, like we're talking about. The Bryan winning the big one, and the Shield are positioned as top baby faces, you know, inevitably to clash with the Authority. And you've got Cesaro with a big upset win that seemed to be positioning him for bigger things. And then we just lost it all, man. And now it's like we are still in the rebuilding phase from that. Whereas, like, I've been a lifelong, you know, watcher and consumer of WWE. There's never been a long stretch of time that I didn't watch. And, man, these week-to-week TVs are getting tougher and tougher to sit through, man. What do we need to do to get back on track, guys? You know, there was a little while there in the summer where it was like, you know, the Usos and the Wyatts was pretty good, and they were doing good stuff on TV. And I feel like for the most part, they've gotten Ambrose and Rollins right, with the exception of every now and then they will have Ambrose do really hokey, ill-fitting comedy. But where do we go to get things back on track headed into the new year, guys?
Well, I think it starts at the top. You've got to have your top babyface and build around that person. And right now, the company needs to make sure that their top babyface is what is somebody that the crowd would agree with in that position. And I think that's been a major hurdle for them over the past couple of years. The crowd
who's
wants to see
guy
guys
right now?
Like Punk.
To either one of you. Who's
Brian.
That guy right now?
Right. Well, who are you asking me?
Yeah, to either one of you. Who is that guy right now that the audience can agree on, in your opinion?
I think from a crowd reaction and a weekly who can steal the show, it's Ziggler. Only because we haven't seen Bryan since the summer, or since the spring. I think Bryan being back in the picture changes a lot of that, and I think that makes him the top guy. With him out of the picture, I think it very well could have been a Bryan redo with Ziggler in that role for the early part of this year.
What about you, Dan?
Well, I would agree. I think Bryan's return definitely changes everything, because I think he is a guy that, as you said, people can all agree on, and people are just salivating at the idea of, oh my gosh, he's back. We all, you know, I mean, there were some guys even on podcasts, on all venues, were saying that, well, I don't even know if he's even going to come back. Like, the conventional wisdom was, well, if he hasn't returned by now, he's not coming back. And now that he's said that he's coming back, now there's going to be kind of that, you know, that little warm feeling that everybody had before he got hurt. Ooh, this is it. You know, he's going to come back and he's going to once again wear the strap. The guy I was thinking of when we were talking about this is Dean Ambrose. I think out of nowhere, Dean Ambrose, I don't think they ever intended. I mean, you remember when they were breaking up the Shield, or where they were hinting about breaking up the Shield. Ambrose was a guy that you could see as possibly being the heel that kind of is playing that Rollins role, and now all of a sudden he's not that. Rollins becomes the Authority puppet, and next thing you know, Ambrose all of a sudden becomes one of the hottest acts on the roster. And I just remember going back to that the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, he comes out and the place went crazy, and it's like, this is Dean Ambrose, right? This isn't Stone Cold or anything. But I mean, the thing is like, he, as you said, he, you know, then he's using hot dog machines to, like, take out the Authority. And, you know, he's doing all kinds of hokey stuff with Bray Wyatt fighting with Christmas trees and whatnot. I mean, but that's a guy, too, that I think it has that show-stealing, you know, the crowd just loves him. They want to see him do well. But I think part of the things that are making people crazy about Ambrose is they don't think that he can necessarily win the big one. And that's kind of what they felt about Ziggler for a long time, too.
Yeah, I think Ambrose literally right now, on the day that we are recording this, is at a real fork in the road where he could ascend to that top guy status, or he could be put in that Ziggler role where he's just kind of pigeonholed. And I mean, Ziggler was pigeonholed for years and may just now be getting out of it, or may, you know, get shoved right back there. Who knows? Another guy that I think comes up in that conversation, maybe not necessarily as the top babyface, but how I don't understand, and maybe there is a grand plan for this. You know, on the first incarnation of Wrestling with Optimism, we always talked about how, you know, maybe there's a grand plan that we're not privy to. But how do you not look at Cesaro and see that this is one of the most awesome wrestlers on the planet? I mean, everything that you could want to check off, this guy checks off. What's missing there, Graham?
Well, I mean, all you have to do is listen to Vince McMahon. He doesn't connect with the fans. Clearly.
You believe that to be an accurate
representation?
You believe?
No, what? It's ridiculous. What? It's like you're
what
not even listening.
To that point?
I'm sorry?
What leads them to that point where they carry that
opinion? I have no idea. You know, Vince is kind of like the George Lucas of this industry, so he's going to make fun of him, but it's also, you know, he's the guy that created all this.
Is that the guy that did Spaceballs?
Stop.
Oh.
It's, you know, you make fun of George for Jar Jar Binks and forget he created the entire Star Wars universe. I don't know what leads Vince to believe that Cesaro doesn't connect, because Cesaro is connecting as a heel, you know, 2 years ago. And why, if he's not connecting, why would you have him win the Battle Royal?
Yeah. And I think that really is the nucleus of this conversation, is it sure seemed like the biggest night of the year sold us a bill of goods that was never followed up on. And I don't know who else feels that way as a viewer, but if you're wondering, you know, where this particular show went in the past 10 or so months, that's where. Is there just wasn't as much optimism to be found in things, because it seemed like the roads that we were traveling on were muddled, and we couldn't really see where we were going as a viewer and as a consumer of the product, and it makes us less excited to come on here and talk about the product. So with that in mind, gentlemen, is there just cause to be optimistic about where we're headed in this new year?
I think so. You've got the Rumble coming up, and they saw what an abortion was last year if you don't listen to the crowd. And so with that in mind, and right after, you know, we got the big Bryan announcement that he's back, I'm inclined to believe if anyone in the office is paying attention and wants to have a successful year, that you almost give the Rumble to Bryan as a do-over for last year.
Mm. I could see that.
It's interesting.
It's kind of like what they did with Brett at WrestleMania 9 and 10. Okay, so we shouldn't have hot-shotted the belt to Hogan. You're the guy we should have stuck with. You're going to get it this time.
Wow, that's a great analogy. I had not thought of that. Dan, what about like these sort of satellite things that are going on around the big monster that's WWE? You know, NXT... is these two-hour NXT specials are some of the best shows the company is producing all year long. And then you've got Lucha Underground. You've got TNA starting up with a new broadcast home. You've got you know, Ring of Honor and New Japan is on American television for the first time on the former HD Net. Are these things enough to get the fan excited? Are they exciting enough to maybe chip away at this monster of the WWE, where you can say, well, I don't really watch them anymore, but I'm just as excited about wrestling because I'm watching PWG and New Japan and all that? What's your take on that?
Well, all you had to do, really.
Not to interrupt too much, could we go to break real quick and then come back and answer that one?
I will think about that response while we go to break. How's that?
That works.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the big four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island, and look at the great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
We're back on Wrestling with Optimism, brought to you by the Place to Be Network. Tons of shows, as you just heard, that you can listen to. We definitely thankful to our new partners for helping us bring the show back. Dan, our new producer, we just fielded to you the question, with all these different promotions and organizations and TV shows and independent shows that are starting up or that are trying to make waves, is that enough to make a fan excited in 2015, even if the monstrous global juggernaut doesn't get its shit together?
Well, yeah, I do think so, and all you really had to do was go on to Twitter or Facebook or any social media while Wrestle Kingdom 9 was going on, and you realize that people are excited about seeing something different. And, you know, I mean, that was a show that, I mean, it was heavily hyped. You know, Jarrett made his rounds, and, you know, Jim Ross made his rounds, and I'm sure Matt Stryker did too, and everybody was talking about, or from, you know, in our circles, a lot of people were talking about that event, and, you know, people are having parties around it, waking and staying up until 2 a.m., or waiting until, you know, I had people on my feed talking about how, well, I've avoided spoilers all day so I could watch this at a regular time, you know, so there was definitely a big buzz for that. ROH going on to regular pay-per-view again, I thought, was a really smart move on their part to kind of get them some exposure. And then I think these sorts of things, whether it's at your local indie down the street or at your high school gym, these are opportunities for you to kind of for the disgruntled fan to kind of put their money where their mouth is. You know, if you're really that upset with WWE, try something new. I don't care if you don't have Destination America. Find a way to watch TNA. Just other opportunities are out there. You just need to go out and find them. And if you really want to make the big conglomerate, the big giant, you know, quake a little bit, then turn your attention elsewhere. And I think there's lots of opportunities out there to enhance your viewing of wrestling.
It almost kind of feels like the territories are coming back in a way, in the sense of, like, there's all these different small promotions that might even be financially treading water, but they all have their own style. Even, you know, from there are differences even from a Ring of Honor show to a PWG show, or if you happen to live in the Carolinas, you're going to see a show different than if you happen to live in Illinois or Massachusetts or wherever you are. Graham, are you optimistic about where we're headed in 2015?
Well, I will say this. Having very little knowledge about the New Japan roster, you know, if it was 1992 or 1993, I would know more of the good guys working the show. I not only ordered Wrestle Kingdom 9, I watched it live at 2 in the morning, so I drank a big pot of coffee to stay up and watch it, and I really enjoyed it. And I think the inclusion of Jim Ross and the inclusion of Matt Stryker helped with that. And I walked away from it going, that was a wise decision. I don't mind that I ordered on pay-per-view instead of getting the New Japan or on-demand service. Mm-hmm. And I want to see more of these guys. I want to see Nakamura and all the guys that sold the show. And I think that it is a prime time right now for these companies that maybe don't have the name value of WWE to find an audience. I think it's also WWE's prime time right now to listen to their audience, because if they don't, they're going to lose more of them. And I don't say that to make it sound like WWE is doing a horrible job in all things and they're going out of business soon, because they're not. They're here to stay. And when all things are going well, they put on a fantastic product. But they can't employ every good worker in the world. And it's good to see these other companies getting a little bit more spotlight so these guys can make a living doing what they're doing, even if they're not working for Vince.
Yeah, I'm in the exact same position that you were in the sense of, like, a lot of the, you know, 20-something-year-old guys that were really excited to watch the show, I was like, good Lord, I haven't really kept up with New Japan since before you were born, you know. In the days of the Japan Super Show, it really kind of made that seem cool and unique when the Japan Super Shows were carried on American TV and when you had the New Japan Juniors that were the most exciting wrestling in the world. It was fun to give them another chance. I usually end up watching the Dome show every year, but I felt like that was the first time I'd ever seen Nakamura, and I felt like that was the first time I'd ever seen Tanahashi, because it was the first time that, with the English commentary, and I thought Stryker did a phenomenal job, it created a context for the matches, and it gave them the opportunity to really leave a lasting impression on me. Like I say, I usually end up watching the January 4th show every year. I may not watch another, you know, major Japanese card in the course of a year, but I usually end up watching that one. And prior to the show this year, I would say the most memorable things about the last several years were, I have vague recollections of Loki wrestling in a suit at one of them, and like Muda's outfits. And I think a lot of that is due to having the connection with those people and not, you know, just kind of watching their matches cold. And I think that was the beauty of doing an English version, an English broadcast of the show, was it created a context where, like, now I feel like, even though I'm sure I'd seen him wrestle, I know I saw the match with Tanahashi last year from the Tokyo Dome, but I feel like I saw Nakamura for the first time, and it allowed me to become a fan because there was a context for what I was watching.
What did you think of Nakamura?
Myself?
Yeah.
I was blown away. I thought he was phenomenal.
Me too. Like, I don't know if he could overcome the English barrier to be, you know, kind of to be a star in America, but holy crap, his presence.
Yeah, to me, he was the breakout star of the show, not taking anything away from the main event, but to me, he was the breakout star of the show, and it seems like a lot of other people seem to feel that way as well. It's very interesting now, and you know, with an American, an English language television show coming up for New Japan, you know, maybe they're poised to really do something and really actually give you know, the American consumer a chance to really get involved in them and support them. It's a really very, once again, you know, I take nothing away from WWE and what they do, but it's a really interesting time in the industry in the sense that there is no major organization that is doing pro wrestling now, which is, you know, almost inconceivable, but WWE has never been more out of the closet as far as we are hokey, bullshit entertainment, sports entertainment, whatever you want to call it.
That's a great tagline.
You know, they are wearing that like the fucking Miss America sash. You know, do not even think about calling us wrestling, you know, all the network specials talk about... They had Bill Apter on there, and they called him a sports entertainment journalist, and it's like... like, they have never been more anti-wrestling, and but it creates an environment where there's nobody doing wrestling, and pretty soon, there's going to be a whole generation that has never seen what one might call traditional pro wrestling. And, you know, coming up as a kid that grew up in North Carolina, that's inconceivable to me. But, you know, if someone could come along, and that's the thing that I love about pro wrestling, and the thing that I'm passionate about, is pro wrestling reaches across any and across any demographics. And that's what Matt Stryker was talking about at Wrestle Kingdom, is, you know, it can reach across the language barrier, it can reach across anything. And, you know, Jamie Dundee told me one time that, you know, those Memphis spots work anywhere. Those, like, you know, those little Memphis comedy spots will pop any audience, even the most, you know, smart mark Northeast crowd, because they haven't seen it. It's something different to them. And I think wrestling, when done right, in general, has that appeal, that they will reach the audience. And we're in an age now where nobody's doing traditional pro wrestling. So if someone like New Japan or Ring of Honor or Lucha Underground or somebody can tap into that, you know, I don't know if there's a way to beat WWE. They got the money, they got the resources, but I think that's the way to become number two, is to go the other way.
And I think the companies that tried to beat WWE before aren't around anymore. You don't need to beat them. You can just create your own niche.
That's the thing. I think that is where society in general is going. You know, we're becoming an on-demand society. You know, ESPN is going to be available on a streaming cable, or on a streaming system soon, where you won't even have to have cable to have ESPN and TNT and TBS and some other shows. And I think cable programming is going to become a la carte in, you know, the next few years, where you'll pay, you know, $29.99 a month for the 60 channels you want, or whatever, or $10 a month for the 10 channels you want, or whatever. I think that's, if there is a way to raise your profile as a wrestling company, it's to do what, you know, PWG is doing, and to do what I think Chikara is doing, is to say unabashedly, unashamed, we are wrestling. This is our style of wrestling that we're trying to create. And I think the worst fucking thing in the world you can do is try to be sports entertainment. Because if for some reason that's what you like, you're more than covered with the 8 or whatever hours it is every week of WWE TV, plus the network that's creating new stuff. Dan, am I crazy here? Or is there an opportunity for someone to say, we are wrestling, this is what it's about, this is what we're going to do, and use that as their means to attempt to carve out a niche as a number two or as an alternative on any level?
Well, we really just met, so I can't comment on how crazy you may or may not be. But I don't, in this regard,
I have stories to back that up.
But I am liking where you're going with this, because, I mean, have you ever, like, been to, like, a random indie show or a Chikara show? Or I went to one this past year, so I mean, this is just one show. I'm not, like, you know, an expert or there all the time or know all the guys or that sort of thing. But have you ever, like, been to a show like that and said, man, I really wish I knew where that story was, because I really couldn't enjoy it because they didn't really have a lot of talking segments so that I could go and get the context of why these guys were fighting in the first place. No, you go because it's fun and there's, you know, a lot of action, and, you know, you kind of form your own opinions on what was going on, and then maybe if they tell you afterwards, well, I was fighting this guy because this guy, okay, cool, now I have a little background, but it wasn't, like, gonna make or break your experience. And I feel like, I used to, for those that, you know, follow PlayStationNation.com, I used to actually do kind of like a recap of all 3 hours of Raw every week, and it was kind of like, you know, a lesson in how much I enjoy punishment and pain, because a lot of the times there was just a lot of fluff that you just didn't want to see, you didn't care about. You know, and I think that's where WWE starts to go a little off kilter. It's like, well, I just watched a 2.5-hour pay-per-view, and now I have to watch a 3-hour show the next day. I'm kind of like burned out by it. But yeah, back to your original point, there is certainly an opportunity for somebody to emerge. I'm not sure if you're ever going to have anybody reach the levels of WWE, or even what we saw in the 90s with a WCW, like competing on the same day, same network, getting similar ratings. But there's alternatives, as we've been talking about this entire show. And I do think that at the end of the day, you need people to kind of step up and say, yeah, I'm not going to go for the status quo anymore. I'm going to go for this alternative and make this successful.
Yeah, I think Al Snow, I did a show with Al Snow in the Carolinas here. It's been a few years ago, and it was a deal where me and I was managing, and my partner was coming in to the town for the first time to kind of avenge me after I was the month before. And they had seen me as an announcer, never seen the guy that I manage a couple hours away. So we shot this angle the month before, and then the night that we had the match, where I was bringing the guy in to avenge me, happened to be the night that Al Snow was there. And I said, hey, you know, would you mind watching our match, you know, blah, blah, blah. He said, of course. And he watched it, and he told me afterwards, you know, he was giving the guys their critique and kind of giving me as a manager, and he said, it was fine, it was good, but I didn't know the story. So then I proceeded to tell him the story of how I'm a manager, and people know me as a manager, but they use me as an announcer here, and I got beat up last month, so I brought my guy in this time, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, that's great, but you don't have that chance to explain it to everybody in the audience like you just explained it to me. He said there should have been something in the context of the segment, if it was a 1-minute promo from you or whatever, that helped tell that story. He said you have to treat the audience like they weren't here last month. And I thought that was great advice, and I have used it for my own benefit running shows in the Carolinas, but I think WWE sometimes will kind of go too far in the other way, whereas I think Chikara does a pretty good job of kind of smartening up the audiences to things. WWE will treat the audience like they don't know anything and they can't remember what happened 2 minutes ago. And I think you're right in the sense that you need that context of the story to really get excited, but there's a balance between having that and feeling like you've sat through a 10-minute interview recapping this, or sometimes even longer than that. But I think you're dead on in the sense that you need to bring the audience up to speed, and it helps their enjoyment of what they're watching exponentially. Graham?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about not only what wrestling we're looking forward to in this year, but what we as a brand are looking forward to this year. What's on the horizon? What projects have you got cooking on the back burner? And then we'll close talking a little bit more about what, if anything, we're super excited about on the wrestling television product now. But what can we expect soon coming from the history of guys?
Well, it's, you know, this is very early into January, and or midway through January, and it's been a busy month. Personally, I'm doing some stuff for PW Insider. I'm doing some stuff for OneWrestling.com. I announced here recently that I'm putting a book together, kind of similar to the Madison Square Garden book that came out right around Thanksgiving. It's going to be focusing on the Baltimore Arena. So it's going to be basically every Baltimore show back to the early 60s. And it's not only going to be WWE, but also NWA, WCW, AWA, all the Baltimore Bashes, the Nitros, the King of the Rings, the Raws, all that kind of stuff is going to be in there, as well as as well as stories from fans and performers. And I've already made contact with a lot of fans that have some really interesting stories. So I think that one's going to come together pretty cool. That's going to come out around June. Tail end of March, we're looking at producing two books. One is going to be a NWA WCW retrospective on Sting and his in-ring career. So it's going to be primarily a results book, but also with photos and possibly with some stories as well. And then there's going to be another one at that same time on The Undertaker. And that's going to be – it's going to be The Undertaker character, so it's not going to be Mark Callis elsewhere or Mark Calloway elsewhere. But it's going to be 1990 to 2014. And like with the Sting book, already made contacts with lots of really interesting folks that have some cool stories, have some cool photos. You can check out the historyofwwe.com for more specific details and how you can be part of those as well. So from the print side, that's what we're looking at from the first quarter or so, but there are plenty more plans in the future for 2015. And of course, there's Wrestling with Optimism is back, and along with that is The History of Wrestling, which is our other new podcast that we're going to be kicking off. And there's probably going to be one or two other big things here in the next few weeks that I'm going to be talking more about, but I'm not in a position to speak about them publicly right now.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the stuff that that you and Matt have coming up, and the others that are working with you, and for whatever my role is going to be on those future projects. It definitely, I don't know, it's a weird time culturally. I kind of touched on it a minute or two ago when I was talking about things becoming kind of an on-demand culture, and I feel like we're having kind of a weird cultural shift now where, I don't know, you can reach an audience and it's easier than it's ever been to whatever your vision is for anything, if it's a book or a movie or a little YouTube short film or a podcast or whatever. It seems like technologically it's easier than ever to make that vision into a reality if you're willing to, you know, put forth the effort and see it through. And it has definitely afforded us the opportunity as a brand to, you know, come up with some really great projects. I know that the MSG book was a labor of love for you, and the World Class book that's coming soon, it has been a labor of love for me, and it has it's really, I don't know, it's weird. It gives you the chance to kind of see your vision through and create something, but like you touched on, Graham, it also gives you the chance to connect with people that you may never have come in contact with. When you put it out there of like, hey, does anybody have photos or clippings or whatever, you wind up meeting very interesting people that have very interesting stories, and it definitely makes us feel connected as a network, almost, of fans.
I agree with that, and in fact, to piggyback off that one, I was kind of working on the MSG book when we were in New Orleans, and while we were in New Orleans, I was rooming, even though I didn't see them hardly at all, but I was rooming with Vladimir, who's like the big super fan that everyone knows from the old MSG shows with Sitting Ringside or on the at WrestleMania crowds. Vladimir and his friend Charlie from New York and Mike Johnson from PW Insider, and it was just kind of that speaks to that as well, that fan networking, where you start working on a passion project and you just don't know who you're going to end up meeting.
Yeah, it definitely seems like kind of reaching out to people electronically and crowdsourcing and all these kind of things has brought us all a little bit closer together. And honestly, that's what has brought this show back, is your relationship going back to with the Place to Be Nation guys that has afforded us this opportunity to come back on a great network of shows and have some help on the production side of things that has kind of made this possible. So it definitely it yields results. If anyone out there has got, you know, an idea or whatever, you know, it's easier now than it's ever been to materialize that idea into something. Guys, what, if anything, are you super excited about coming up? Is there, you know, this, the whole idea behind this whole thing is optimism. Is there a lot of things right now that have got you optimistic? What do you think is going to be the stuff that we're really talking about here in the months to come?
Jeez, it's hard not to be optimistic during this time of year. I mean, you got it's almost like the holidays of if you're particularly a WWE fan, because you have your Rumble, you have your build to WrestleMania, but even if you're not even a big wrestle, you know, it seems like everybody sort of migrates to the site of the Rumble. I mean, Jim Ross has his shows coming up, his one-man shows in the Philadelphia area. You have Ring of Honor doing their, they always have a tremendous card at the beginning of the year, so there's that going for you. They certainly hit a home run last year with WrestleMania, so you know, you got to see what they have for an encore. There's a lot of speculation what's going to happen with Brock. Is Brock even going to make it to WrestleMania? We haven't really mentioned him at all today, but as exciting as the finish that we hope for at the Rumble is going to be, what's that going to lead to in March or April in San Francisco area when WrestleMania actually happens? So, and maybe back to what we were saying from the wrongs of last year, maybe a lot of that gets corrected. Maybe the script gets flipped in 2015, and that's certainly something to look forward to.
I think so too. I think that's a great analogy, that it is like the holidays if you're a wrestling fan. It kind of, and you know, this, everything that happened this year could really raise the profile of the January 4th Tokyo Dome show to where next year and in the years to come, that's an even bigger part of things. You know, I think it's been on a lot of people's radar for a long time, but I think it could potentially reach a point where it's on even more people's radar, and you know, it's a very real possibility that here in mid-January we've already seen the best match we're going to see all year with Nakamura against Kota Ibushi. So that, you know, that helps raise the profile of something like that. Graham, what are you excited about? What are you optimistic about?
Well, I think when we talk about optimism and having the podcast Wrestling with Optimism, it can be beyond Monday's Raw. If your entire outlook on being a happy wrestling fan is dependent on whether or not the Bunny and Adam Rose get a segment on Raw or not, then you need to think a little bigger picture. I'm very optimistic, and it goes beyond what we're working on. It goes beyond our projects. I think what Dan said is true. This kind of is the holidays. I think that we will get a very fun Rumble. I think the recent changes to the main event speak to maybe some recent changes in what the WrestleMania plans are going to be. And I think that, I think the Daniel Bryan situation is a factor there. So I think the guys to look for from the fan standpoint are Bryan and Ziggler. I think you have to look at Roman right now. I don't think that he is in the same spot, or he's pegged for the same spot that he was maybe 2 months ago. But I think by the end of the year, he probably will be in that spot. So there's a lot going on. The company will make mistakes, but the company will find successes as well. And I think WrestleMania, I hate that I'm not planning to go because it's on the other side of the country. because I think it will be a really good time. And what WWE needs to look for, and hopefully they don't make the same mistake, is the WrestleMania aftermath. What happens after? Where do the guys go from there? And I think that was a major factor in why our optimism waned for a little bit. But, like I said, you got to think big picture. And if Raw is making you sour as a wrestling fan, there are other stuff out there. There is other stuff out there. And like you were saying, like Brad, as you were saying earlier, if you want to do your own stuff, now is the perfect time. We are not the most technologically sound or savvy people in the world, and yet, you know, amongst the Place to Be Nation and amongst the History of WWE brand, we're able to do some pretty cool stuff. And if you've got some talent there and some passion and drive, find out what cool stuff you can do.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent message to leave things off with. We will be back. It will not be 10 months. I can promise you that. We will be back soon. We obviously want to thank the Place to Be Nation and Dan and all the guys down there for helping us out, getting us all back together here. We will talk at you again very, very soon. In the meantime, you can hit me up on Twitter at Stutzy, Stutsy, or hit Graham up at The History of WWE. Dan, you got anything you want to plug real quick? Anybody you want to be found, or you want to stay kind of in the shadows where you can't be dealing with these maniacs on an everyday basis?
Well, the running joke on the Steve Carino show, which, by the way, you could still get the entire archive of the Steve Carino show at PlaceToBeNation.com. The running
one
joke.
One of my favorite people ever in the business, by the way.
The running joke on our program is that I had fewer Twitter followers than his one-year-old son, and that fact still holds true. So
we need to change that.
Maybe it's pretty over, though. I don't know.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to catch up to. I'm not even going to mention his name because you probably already follow him. But anyway, if you want to join the few, the proud, the revolution, that is my Twitter following. It's at dmacp2b. Who knows, if this is a regular gig, you might want to follow me, I don't know. But definitely check out PlaceToBeNation.com. Of course, you heard all the ads earlier, all those different shows. Of course, the Kevin Kelly show, really cooking right now. He talked to Dennis Stamp not long ago. He also talked to Jim Ross, of course, during the Wrestle Kingdom 9 surge that they were on. Kevin, every other week, you can check him out on PlaceToBeNation, of course. I'm not really writing anything right now. I think there's a little grassroots campaign to try to get me to write Raw again. I'm not sure. It might take a little bit more convincing, perhaps even some of the green stuff to get me to do that again. But no,
lately it's taking me a lot of convincing to write about Raw, but and that's just me.
But yeah, certainly check us out, PlaceToBeNation.com.
Yeah, we want to thank you guys so much for helping get us back up and running here. Very excited about this partnership and everything that it can bring to you. And thank you to the viewers, the people that have contacted me and Grant and Graham in the past 10 months on Twitter and asked, hey, where'd the show go? Are you guys going to start doing the show again? We're going to try. You know, the name of the show always kind of, to me, had that double meaning in the sense that sometimes as a fan, you wrestle with maintaining your optimism, and that's where we've been the last few months, but you know, maybe that happens with anything. Maybe that happens when you know, your favorite guy gets killed off on a TV show, or when you invest 9 years of your life in a TV show and then they kill the fucking mother. I don't know, maybe that's just me, but nevertheless, we will be back to dish out some more wrestling with optimism in the very near future. Thanks, guys.